Like I said, I tried everything known to man to stop the addiction. That's a really poignant line, everything known to man. And it wasn't really until I started to... I went to church, right, because the music was pretty good. Wasn't really listening to the message, to be honest with you, but I loved the worship, and that was great fun. And it really wasn't until I started to match the words that were on the screen to what the pastor was saying at the time. And that song really sort of rounded it all up. Restore, reheal, Jesus saves. And I thought, well, what have I got to lose? I've tried everything else. Let's give it a shot. And that song really was the point that made me make that decision.
And what got you going to church in the first place?
Okay, we had a couple that used to come to the lodge from the church that I now attend. And they were just getting a small group of people together with the Why Jesus books, little red books you might have seen. And real just basic conversations about Jesus and church, and the real basics, you know, going through the Lord's Prayer and what it meant. And then one of the guys that was taking this, Colin, who ended up there to be my best man, spoke about the Samaritan woman at the well. And he said this line, well, whatever you're doing isn't working, is it? And that kind of always stuck with me.
Do you want to remind people of the story of the Samaritan woman?
Yeah. I mean, Jesus is traveling through, and he goes to a well, and there's the woman at the well, the Samaritan woman, and it's midday, and nobody goes out in the midday heat. But this woman was pretty much an outcast from her village. She had been very promiscuous. She'd had five husbands and was living in sin at the time with another man. And in the culture then, it was very anti to talk to women, with the men, never mind a Samaritan woman who was, it was scandalous, really. So once she was shocked that he would even speak to her, and he asked her to get her a drink, and he said, but I can give you a drink of life. And he told her her whole life, and she was absolutely amazed, and she ran back to the village and gave great testimony to the village, and they all came out, and many people were saved that day.
And you can relate to that, or the pastor was relating that story to you.
Yeah, because she was the outcast. No, she wasn't. She thought that she had no value and was worthless. And that's where I was at the time.
And what did you actually do to, you say, so you thought maybe you could give Jesus a go. So what did that mean? What did you do?
I prayed a lot, which I was really rubbish at. And I just kept going. That was the biggest thing. I kept going to church. I just kept going. I was meeting new people, nice, kind, friendly, like-minded people. I joined a connect group or a house group, as you might know them, which enabled me a little bit more in a relaxed atmosphere to start talking openly about the Bible and stuff I didn't understand. And then one day by the river Weir, I drew a practical line in the sand, so to speak, and surrendered it. I stepped over and I left it behind. Well, most of it.
So were you at that stage, you say, cured of your addiction?
Not fully. No, that really came when I gave my testimony in church, and I didn't really give my full testimony. I withheld some stuff back because of the shame and the guilt and the embarrassment. It wasn't really until I realized that, because I was still thinking, me, aren't I great? Look at me, haven't I done well? That I felt terrible, and I had to go back to church and tell them that I'm sorry, that I need to say this. And I really told everything. And at that point, I just fell to my knees, really. And miraculously, from drinking half a bottle of vodka every morning to function to nothing. I didn't crave it. I didn't want anything. And now I've been 11 years clean and 10 years sober. And it's never troubled me since. That's a good thing in some ways, but it's also a very difficult thing when I'm sharing that with people, because people want the same thing. And Jesus, you know, it's not in my timing, it's in his timing. And everyone's unique in their addiction and recovery. But it was pretty miraculous, and I thought I was done with that. Was I was like, thanks God, you know, crack on to the next person. I'm really grateful that you've cured me of this addiction. But now the more I kept going, the more I kept giving, he just kept blessing me and blessing me and blessing me and blessing me. And in the end, I just gave up. I just said, oh, well, come on then, crack on.
And practically, how has Jesus changed your life?
Well, I've got a great job. I'm in a very privileged position to be part of the management team in Swan Lodge and serve those that are less fortunate than me and empathise with them. I've got a house and got a lovely wife and two young daughters, Faith and Grace.
I think we've got a picture of you and...
That'll be her, yes. The current Mrs. Hilton.
Yep, and when did you get married? Oh, there you are.
We got married in church.
Yeah, when?
Oh, flipping heck. I'm so glad she's not here. 8 years ago. Yeah. Pick a number. Yeah, that works. 8 years ago.
Yeah.
And on St. George's Day. I remember that.
Oh, well done. Good.
23rd of April.
And Faith and Grace. Yes, so two good names for...
I don't know where they came from.
Yes.
Faith. Faith, on your right, has actually got hormone deficiency, so she has to have she was a lot shorter than Grace at one point, so we have to give her a pen every day with growth hormone, but she's shooting up now.
Excellent. How did you and Jane meet?
She was on the worship team, and I was volunteering in the kitchen doing the biscuits and all of the stuff that the hospitality team do here, and... being from the hospitality background, I used to decorate the tray really nicely and have it all exactly how I wanted it, and she'd go and nudge the tray. And it would do my head in. And, well, there we go. Then God took over.
Excellent. So, we spoke about you joining the team at Swan Lodge. What made you want to go back and work with homeless people and addicts? You'd at last freed yourself from addiction. Why didn't you just say, I want to turn my back on that?
You said a big word there, free of it. About 20 years before, when I first went into the detox, I was with a guy who was a heroin addict from Denmark, and he could only afford to stay there for 5 days. He knew that when he went back to his flat, he would smell the heroin that was in, maybe not there, but he'd smell it in the room, and he would be back on heroin. And I remember thinking then, you know, I need to be working this. And then 20 years later, it took me to, when I was sober and volunteering, I had an opportunity that someone showed a great deal of trust in me. Christine, who's the service manager, you know well, a very passionate, massive Scottish lady who you hear before you see her. And she saw something and believed that I could be of value to the team. So I was fortunate to get an assistant support worker's job on relief. And then it progressed into a full-time support worker. Then I did that for 3 or 4 years. Then I was an administrator, which was sounds really boring, but it was quite a good job because it was part of the under management. And then very recently, for the last 3 years, I've been what they call a program coordinator. So I manage the support team and deputy manager role, which is a bit bizarre. when I see my, it says duty manager and it says Craig up there. It's all a bit surreal when I've walked up, crawled up the ramp.
And how does your experience actually help you in your work with the residents of Swan Lodge?
Yeah, I don't share my testimony all the time because I don't think it's relevant all the time. I'm very conscious that their recovery is their recovery, and first of all, they need to look after the physical side of it, a bit of harm reduction.
Some of them have no idea that you've got this.
Some still don't.
No reason why they should, you say?
No, unless they Google and it's still on there. But there is a time when it's very important for me to share that I think it's going to help them in their recovery and their journey. Because sometimes when people say, well, you don't know what it's like, I can actually say, well, you know what? I do know what it's like. I have sat in that chair, and let's talk about it.
What can people like us do to help the homeless? Now, that sounds pretty bizarre, sort of trite thing to say, but practically, what thing can we do? I mean, homelessness is a big problem.
Yeah.
In this country. What sort of things can we, as individuals and as a Christian community, do?
It's always difficult, isn't it? Because you always feel as if you're unsure about approaching someone who's on the street. What reaction you're going to get? What should I do? Should I give money? Should I give food? Should I just pass by? All of that is correct. All of that is important. People say don't give money because you're just going to feed an addiction. Yes, you are. Probably. I always give money because I know that for that hour or two, that when they've had their drink or they've had their fix, they're in a better place just for that point in time. By not giving them money, you're not going to cure them of addiction just by giving them a sausage roll and a great cup of coffee. You're not going to cure them of that addiction or whatever their issues are. But if you can give some peace and contentment to them for just that small period of time, what I would suggest is that you just say hello. The hardest thing I ever found was that I was already so desperately lonely and so desperately guilty and so desperately shameful. I just wanted someone to be kind. I just wanted someone just to say, hi, I'm Bill, I'm Mary, whatever. So I could say, I'm Craig, not I'm homeless with a homeless and hungry placard. Just show them that the Christian love, that you know what, somebody does give a hoot about them. You might not be able to help them. I don't know, Google where your local homeless services is, what the council number might be. Have it in a card in your purse or your wallet. And just, I don't know, tell them, well, have you tried going there? If you want to be active and you want to put some hands and feet to your Christian faith, then do that. But please, I just implore you just to say hi. It just might make a difference in just having some time to talk to someone.
And there is actually, if you didn't know, there's work going on in Beckenham and Penge with homeless people. And if you want to find out more about that, talk to Rowena afterwards. If I could see through the lights, I'd say that. Well, I can see a hand waving, so Rowena's over there, actually behind that camera. Do talk to her if you want to find out what's happening in this area with helping homeless people. But at your church, you also lead something called the Recovery Course, and we do a Recovery Course here at Christchurch too, but not everybody will know what the Recovery Course is about. Please explain.
Okay. Well, we run the Recovery Course at Swan Lodge, actually. That's it. And Recovery Course is based on the 12 steps that follow the AA principles, Alcoholics Anonymous. Those 12 steps, it's a program of different courses that really the AA is linked to what they call a higher power. Now, I tried AA, and it didn't work for me. The difference with the recovery course is that instead of the higher power being a higher power, which could be anything that gives you peace, contentment, it's Jesus. This is purely a Christian-based course. There's no mucking about with higher powers or anything. It's just Jesus. And so your course is all Christian-based. It looks at different scriptures you go through. All stages from surrender to forgiveness.
But who's it for, though?
It's for everybody who's suffering from any sort of addiction. That could be anything from gambling, porn sites, alcohol, drugs, self-harm, anything.
Sorry, carry on.
It's run over 15 weeks. We watch a bit of a media clip, which covers the course, and then we have a conversation. We have a bite to eat, and we talk. It has to be run by someone who's recovering from an addiction of some sort, supported by somebody else, and then, which I think is really important, because you know, to be able to talk to someone about their very personal life, you've got to have that empathy, you've got to have that connection, and you can share. It's run in small groups, so it's a bit more intimate, and we talk about the local church and how important that is, and we pray.
And does it work?
Yes, it does work. If we turn one life to Christ, that's a win. And I don't care if we've got 10 or 6 or 4 people on the course. If one person gives their life to Christ, that's a win.
And you can see next course here at Christ Church starts in January. I've got another final set of questions to ask you in a bit, Craig. But I wonder if anybody's got any questions from the floor, anything they're desperate to ask Craig before I do that.
Be nice.
And if you are going to ask a question, we'll get a microphone to you because we're recording the whole evening and it's it'd be a bit strange if there was a silent bit. Right, somebody's going to ask a question. Right.
I am delighted to hear your story, and I have great respect for you telling the full story and all the humiliation that comes with it. But I wish you well, but for so many people who sometimes have not drunk for 5 years, sometimes 10 years, there comes another trip up. And what can you say to somebody in that stage to stop them turning to despair?
So they've had a period of abstinence, but they're tripped up again. Lapses happen. I had 25 years of lapses. I often, in my early years of my faith, questioned Jesus about the timing. Why did it take 46 years to open my eyes and my ears and my heart to him? Don't give up. It doesn't matter how many times you fall down. Stand up, brush it off, day one. It's so important to have somebody around you, a network of people that you can be open and honest with. So I tell the individual that, you know, it happens. If you've done it once, you can do it again. This time might be the time. I had a long period of abstinence, and I fell, but I got up. And that's what I suggest, that there is a life worth living. And you can only live that life if you stand up.
Thank you. Anybody else? Oh, that, right, good. Thank you. I can't see a thing.
Hi. During your darkest times, were you ever suicidal or something? On your darkest times, or was there always like tiny bit of hope or wanting to live, but it's just you're struggling?
Addiction is a mental health problem. I really do believe that addiction is a mental health rather than a physical problem. There were many times that I lost all hope, and I'd be better off not being here because I was just a burden to everybody. Thankfully, I've got a big yellow streak running right down my back, and I wouldn't really know what to do and how to do it, but I support lots of people in trauma who are in that position. And I've done lots of courses on suicide prevention. And all I would urge you to say is that to anybody that's facing that trauma or in trouble, just one line: what can I do for you right now to keep you safe? What can I do for you right now? It's the best line for anybody that's really in serious chaos.
Thank you. Time for one more question at this stage. Is anybody else?
It seems like there's an increasing encouragement to... There was a time when we were encouraged not to give perhaps homeless people on the street rough sleepers money. And it seems like maybe the tide is turning on that a bit now, and we are encouraged to think about it. And what you said about even just providing that little bit of relief can be worth it. I guess one of the things that we see around here are quite a few people who are begging for money, who are perhaps part of kind of syndicates and kind of maybe linked to sort of gang stuff and more sinister stuff. What would be your response to, because obviously we wouldn't want to perpetuate that, what's your response to how we respond wisely to even spotting the signs as to someone who might genuinely need money?
Yeah. First and foremost, you've got to keep safe. That's ultimately, you've got to be practical and just keep yourself safe from harm or doubt. If you see the same person in the same place over and over and over again, doesn't necessarily mean they're homeless. There are professional beggars out there. There are teams of professional beggars out there. You'll see them on the tube and hear them on the tubes. I had one when I came down here. In most circumstances, if you're unsure, just say hi. If they ask you for money, then probably not homeless or hungry. If they ask you for food, yeah, fine, give them food. But I would, like I say, I'll just have that information just to say, look, have you tried contacting this? It's always about building a relationship. If you go past someone the same time every day, it's always like, good morning, try and find out their name. So you can say, hi, Fred. Morning, Fred. And if they're genuine, they will be willing and wanting to talk to you. So just build that relationship and show them that you care.
Great. Thank you. At the beginning of this second half, we had the song about Jesus Saves. And I remember when I invited you to come 6 months or so ago, you said the opportunity to talk about homeless people and Jesus was too good to miss, really.
Yes.
So we're very grateful. What is it that you love about Jesus?
He loves me. There you go. Now I better expand on that. When I was at my lowest, when I was at rock bottom, he was the rock I fell on. He would never let me take more than I could handle. And I've got a great relationship with my God, and he's a God of not just of transformation, but of restoration. He's not only transformed me from the way I behave, the way I talk, the way I think, the way I act, the way I am as a husband, a father, a son, a brother, a colleague, a friend. He's affected every walk and every inch of my life. He's now turning me into who he created me to be. I found my calling in working for the homeless, but he's put me on that path. I now realize all of the chaos was pointing me to this point where I can share with you. If I wouldn't have the experience or the knowledge of homelessness and addiction and helping others, unless I came to this, came through it. But Jesus, it's hard to think that when you're so desperate, when you're so down and out, that if I was that only person left on the planet, he would have still come and died for me, regardless. And that kind of blows me away, that he loves me that much. And I see that as such strength. I used to see it as such a bit of a namby-pamby weakness about being a Christian, you know. You can't handle it on your own, so you're going to pretend there's somebody else that can do that. I see it as absolute strength. I see it as awesome power. I am so grateful and so thankful that I give thanks to God every single day for what he has done, is doing, and will continue to do in my life, and for my family. I said about restoration. I'm now talking to my two brothers, who initially said they would rather have a religious nut as a brother rather than a dead brother, but now can understand that I'm the best that I can be. I've restored relationship with my ex-wife, with my children. They come and visit occasionally. I go and see them occasionally. The extended family. My mum, as you can imagine, is still doing cartwheels. 86, wherever she is. 86. My daughter still phones occasionally and says, "Dad, you're still going to church, aren't you?" And I go, "I am." And she goes, "Oh, good." It's just that security of knowing her dad's in the right place, because the local church is so important to me. And I know it is to you. It's a big part of our lives as a family. It was lovely seeing the girls run around this morning in church, Lucas to Mary, and it was just fabulous, that because it reminded me of being back in my church, and because my girls have grown up in church, and the fun and the fellowship that you have is why I'm here.
So you've found that through your faith. So are you convinced that Jesus is for everyone?
Or
is...
Absolutely. Mm. I work with very unchurched people. And you know, when I support them along to church, just to show them what it's like, because the hardest part is getting them through that front door, anybody, because the perception of what church is it's way off the chart for the unchurched. And we just need to try and be brave and be a bit bolder and invite people along. But it's for absolutely everybody. I was speaking to Luca earlier about when I first went to church, I probably wasn't smelling the best and didn't present the best. And initially, we weren't even brought into the church. We were put in a coffee room. But that's changed. That's changed. I would quite gladly lead anybody who comes in to sit at the front, because Jesus came for the lost. And that's absolutely everybody in every creed, every religion, every colour, for everyone.
Brilliant. Thank you ever so much, Craig. And do talk to Craig afterwards about anything we've been discussing, whether it's homelessness or addiction, or how you can get to know Jesus. You'd be happy to talk, wouldn't you?
Absolutely. Great. Yeah, I'm not that scary.
Yeah. But thank you ever so much, Craig.
Thank you, John.